Geek News Central, show number 609, is sponsored by GoDaddy.com, Citrix GoToMeeting, and Infusionsoft. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Have we got a great show for you? Coverage tonight includes a little discussion about the new Google Instant Search, AT&T antics, and of course, Apple getting bent by the FTC. All right, everybody, you guys know what comes next? Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There is no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Honolulu. Hey, everyone, I want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, to all of you that are longtime listeners and viewers of the show. Hey, thanks for staying subscribed and being part of the family. Of course, if you're new to the show, being part of the Ohana is simple. You just being here and watching the show and potentially subscribing is really what it's all about. And for those of you that don't live in Hawaii, Ohana really just stands for family. And I want to welcome you to the family of listeners and viewers of the show. Of course, we want to give a shout out to our listeners from 170 countries worldwide that are subscribed to the show and downloaded via podcast, either via iTunes, Zune Marketplace, through their portable media device, whatever it may be, and how you get the show. The main thing is get it through the subscription. You can find the subscription available, basically the links available at geeknewscentral.com. You'll find the iTunes link, the Zune, the standard RSS podcast feed. So, of course, we want to encourage you to get subscribed to the show. That way you won't miss a single episode. And after every show, I send out a newsletter. The newsletter contains everything that I'm going to talk about in tonight's show. It takes all the tech links, takes all the links that have been submitted by listeners and viewers like you. And really, if you want to contribute to the show, all you really have to do is email me at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Or if you have a comment you want to leave about the show, you can call our 24-hour hotline at area code 619-342-7365. It's open for your comments and feedback, and we always play those and read the email comments at the end of the show. But the newsletter really is the way for you to stay connected. It reminds you that there's a new show available and also has a permanent archive of all the content that I'm going to cover really right in your email inbox. Hey, if you're watching us on the on Justin.tv at or on Ustream, we want to thank you for hanging out with us. And I know it's late in many parts of the world, but thanks for cozying up with us late in the evening here. Of course, it's about 8 p.m. Honolulu time, so it makes it 11 on the East Coast, or I guess 2 o'clock in the morning on Eastern Standard Time. But thanks for hanging out. And of course, if you're watching the show post-show, either on the Roku or on the Boxy, hey, thanks for hanging out and being with me tonight or watching the show. And kick back in your lazy boy, you know, point the remote control, fast forward through the boring stuff if you need to. That's what it's there for. So enjoy the show. Again, those of you watching on Roku or on the Boxy. Hey, let's take care of a little business here, and then we'll get into the content tonight and actually go through my little list of stuff that I have stacked up. Hey, one thing I told you guys last show, that the GoDaddy promo code COMSALE is now working on renewals once again. So we've talked to the folks at GoDaddy because some of you wanted a .com code that you could use anytime for a new .com. So what they've issued us is a new code, COMSALE2. That's COMSALE2 for new .com purchases. You'll be able to pick up .coms for $7.49. For renewals, you use the code COMSALE, and that will get you a renewal at $7.99, 50 cents more than the actual brand new registration. But I guess that's the trade-off you get to a multi-year subscription when you do your first purchase of that .com to save the most money. Of course, if you're a new customer to GoDaddy, $1.99.com names as many as you can handle. Use that Geek199 code, Geek199, and definitely check them out over there at GoDaddy.com. We want to thank GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here. And the main thing to remember is all my codes, which are large, there's 10 of them now, and ways you can save money depending on what you're purchasing can be found at GeekNewsCentral.com/GoDaddy, and that lists all the codes there, so definitely check those out. All right, want to take a few minutes here and just walk through some notes here I've got before we get into the content tonight. We're going to do the first Morning Tech Show this coming Saturday. So I'm going to have as a guest, I'm going to have Annie McCaskey from SDR News, and I'm going to have Rob Greenlee from Zune. He's going to be joining the morning show. Now, those two are going to be joining the morning show with me. We're going to get started right here at Geek News Central, right? Same exact place on the Ustream site as well. We're going to be starting at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, or 6 a.m. for me here in Honolulu. And I'll actually be looking forward to the time zone change, because what that will allow me to do is actually start at 7 here, but we're still 6 hours behind the East Coast. So for me, at least, it'll be the morning tech show. For some of you, it'll be an early lunchtime type of event. We're going to go for probably an hour or so, and we're going to be talking about things that you've been submitting me that you want me to go into much deeper, deeper depth on some of the stuff we've covered this week. And it's just going to be kind of a nice conversation back and forth between the three of us. This will be the first show where we have just three. And then as the show grows, we'll continue to bring more people in. And, of course, we tapped into the Ohanosaurus here. So if you tune in, you'll be able to see Andy and Rob right over my shoulder. So look forward to having those guys on Saturday with me. And I hope that you will join us for the very first Morning Tech Show. And again, with my guests, Annie McCaskey and Rob Greenlee. And we'll be rotating tech celebrities in throughout the months. But this is going to be an every Saturday event. And I look forward to bringing this new show to you. First new show that I have officially launched individually, really since we started doing this gig back in 2004. So as I did on the last show, I forgot which camera I was on. So I wanted to make sure I brought us back front and center here. As a reminder, We're having the Apple TV giveaway, and this is a chance for those of you that want to pick up an Apple TV. Really, the way to qualify is to become an insider. And all you got to do is go over to geeknewscentral.com/insider. Any new insider between now and the 27th, and the existing insiders that are already part of the insider family there will be eligible for the Apple TV giveaway. What else have I got going on here? We're still working on we're going to be bringing five more shows to the network to here at Geek News Central, and I continue to get emails in, and at some point here in the near future, I'm going to start working through those. The Twitter stuff is all ready to go. I've actually written up all the proposal and how we're going to work those that want to work for us on a sponsor tweet side, so we'll have that going out probably this weekend as well. But don't forget to get over geeknewscentral.com/offers/insider/GoDaddy. And if you want to pick up Geek News Central wear, shirts, t-shirts, hats, and so forth, cafepress.com/Ohana store. All right, that's it for just my regular announcements. And then let's go ahead and take care of a little more business, then we'll get right into the regular content. You guys know that face-to-face business meetings with clients and colleagues is really going to be very important in any aspect of a business. But business travel is a hassle, and it's often a complete waste of money. Sometimes you'll go all the way across the country only to walk away from a meeting, feeling less than satisfied about the results. So for those meetings that you're just a little bit unsure of, if you don't need to do a face-to-face meeting, do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. It's award-winning online meeting service by Citrix. With just a click, really, you can host sales presentations, training sessions, product demos, you name it. I use it every day, every single day. And matter of fact, sometimes the sessions are left open with clients or people that I'm working with for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time. But the best part is you can have unlimited meetings for a single flat rate of $49 a month. That's unlimited online meetings plus voice over IP service, so you don't even have to pick up a phone. As a listener of this show, you can get a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting by going to GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Get that trial of GoToMeeting. Check it out. Try it. Let me know what you think about it. And thanks for GoToMeeting for being a longtime sponsor here. Okay, let me go ahead and bounce into the regular content tonight. And what do you guys think of the set-top box content that I covered on the last show? Did you guys, what was your takeaways from that? And I've gotten some private emails from some folks have asked me not to discuss those comments or their comments with you guys. But so far, at least the feedback I've gotten from you guys is some of you were astounded by some of the information I shared with you. But if you haven't checked that out, it's in show number 608, I believe. I think tonight's show is 609. So definitely check out the previous show that we did Monday. It was show number 608. Have that info in there. Now, you guys remember on the last show, I gave away a Roku to a lucky listener of the show. And it was all through submissions by all of you submitting me unique leaks. These are these top secret websites that you read on a daily basis but really aren't mainstream. So some of the inputs we got were kind of mainstream, and many that we got were actually unique. So what I'm going to have in the show notes tonight is I'm going to have three links. I'm actually made all of these links publicly available to all of you for the ones that have been submitted to the show. And I think there was about 300 total websites that were submitted for me to add to my reading list. And because I use Google Reader, I'm just going to put the public links in the show notes. You guys can check them out. If you want to subscribe to those yourself, feel free to. But again, these are links that have been submitted by the Ohana. If you've got something to add to this list, something that's unique, that's different, let me know and we'll add it to the list. You know, just drop me an email, but I'll have those three links up for you. There's a science feed, there is a tech feed, and then there's just a regular website feed. So I've got them broken down that way, and you can check it out. You remember a couple of shows ago, I was talking about Scoble and how his website had not been updated in a while. And today I was, I just bounced over there to take a look and see what Robert was up to. And I was pretty surprised by the post. He put a post up basically saying, get ready for the 10th fall of Scobalizer. And he was basically going to tell what I learned on my summer blogging vacation. And, you know, Scoble was busy during his vacation. But what really kind of surprised me in the article was his announcement that his son had been diagnosed as autistic. And, you know, I have a number of friends who have different levels of autistic children. And my heart goes out to Scoble and Miriam as they work through this. And they've caught it early. I think his son is 3. So, you know, it's just pretty private thing that Scoble has publicly, you know, talked about on his blog here. And he had basically Twittered it immediately after walking out of the doctor's office. I don't know if my wife would have allowed that if we'd have found out one of our children were autistic. But I guess it's one of those things, and I'm sure for those of you that have friends or family member or even maybe a son or a daughter that has troubles with autism, you guys can feel for Scoble. I'm sure they're going to do great. He's probably going to have a great support team around him, and that's probably the most important thing is to work with other parents, and we wish him and his wife the best of luck, and of course our thoughts and prayers are with them as well as they move forward. And if anyone can really make an impact, I think Scoble will. So we'll see where he goes with this. Maybe it'll become an agenda item for him, but good luck to Robert and his wife. Of course, the big news, and I don't know what else I can say from yesterday, was the news from Google. Really, they basically, and I think we all knew this was coming, was the Google Instant Search. And I was busy pretty much all afternoon and did not get to play with it until early evening. And, you know, I was really kind of surprised because I have certain searches I always do. We all do. We, you know, if you're self-obsessed with yourself, you search your name, you search your website, you search some keywords that are surrounding your website. You know, there's certain, there's probably about 20-25 search words that I look at on a regular basis to see where I have fell out in the search results. And as I was typing some of the search results, I was really kind of surprised of some of the results that I was seeing. And, you know, I'm just going to bring this up on the screen for you guys to see, and I'll actually walk through this with those of you that are just listening. I got the Google page up, and I'm just going to type geek. And the first thing it offers up is Geek Squad, Geek, Geek Tool, Geeks.com. So if I move to the next tab and I say news, so automatically Geek News, Geek News Central, Geek News Sites, Geek News Blog. And if I tab down on it, Geek News Central is the first search result for Geek News Central. The second for Geek News Sites, Geek News Blog were number one. Geek News Central Podcast, of course, we dominate that. So I thought it was pretty interesting on that. So then I did some other searches, just some general searches, and I just did Apple and Apple, Apple Store, Applebee's, Apple Trailers, Apple iPhone, and on and on. You know, basically it gives you four. But I think the thing that shocked me the most with the what I read about the Google Instant Search was that if an ad, so as I was typing in Geek News, Geek, some ads popped up, sponsor links popped up, and I really didn't pay attention to it. I was kind of looking down through the face of the search results, and then I typed a little more, and the ad changed, the sponsor link changed there, and I feel sorry for anyone that is advertising on Google AdSense, because the new policy is if that ad displays for more than 3 seconds, you paid for it. And that kind of just like blew me away. But what really kind of even more time or shifted my thought process on how I'm going to be searching on Google is that, you know, unless I really have something in depth that I want to search for, you know, if I want to search for, you know, for example, a Sony TV model number, and then I start putting in the model number, you know, that's going to kind of work normal. But if I'm going to just do a generic search, I could see myself very easily just pushing the down button and choosing what word Google has suggested to me. And that is subliminal dangerous because really they popped it in front of you. It's not subliminal at all. It's right there in front of you. But at the same time, does it stop you from thinking? Does it stop you from having, you know, you guys play with it. Tell me what you think. Just, you know, think about some search words. Try to type it and not look at it. Then look at the results. Or do a couple of things and then just see what your temptations are. If you're tempted to pick what they have selected for you, or do you go on and deeper? I don't know. You can turn this off. If you want to, that's a good thing. You can turn it off and go back to the old way of doing it. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Now, one thing I thought was interesting, and then let me bring up the bring the page back up, is I type in Geek News. They had it on the side map over here. They have everything, images, video, maps, more. Well, if I type in, keep going here, I want to see, they remove that little pull down. So it's not, because you can sort then by blogs. If I just do Geek News and click on the blogs button on the side. So I wish that little drop down would not drop down. But as you type more search terms, it has a tendency to continue to narrow as it goes through them. So I guess maybe it's too because I'm showing this screen on my on the video stream, and I've got this particular screen at 1024x768 resolution. So maybe that's why it's doing it. But I think they got something going here, and this is radical change for them. Now, Steve Rubel is saying on his website at steverubel.com that Google instant makes SEO irrelevant. And here's the thing that I found that was funny. The first thing I was thinking about, man, the SEO people are going to be going nuts. I started counting from the time Google made the announcement until about 15 minutes ago, and I had received, sorry about that, my phone's buzzing. I had received 32 emails from individuals talking about how SEO is not going to be hurt because of Google Instant search. So I played around with a few of these, you know, different search terms, some of my top secret search terms that I'm trying to move some pages up in rankings. And I don't know. I think SEO is still going to be effective, but I think the SEO people are scared to death on this. Some comments that the public made was guy over GadgetGov said, it saves one mouse click over existing suggestion methods, pointless. Another person says, spiffy trick. Seems like they'll be able to improve the concept almost oblivious in hindsight. I think these are pretty narrow. Another guy says, it's distracting now, but I can see how it will be useful once I get my head around it a bit. Another person said, my initial reaction, digital version of motion sickness. Another person said, it's like autocomplete me after a run-in with Balco. So, you know, and basically I picked up these Twitter responses over on technologizer.com. I just destroyed that. What an idiot. But anyway, I have these links up in the show notes for you guys to check out. A lot of people had comments on this. Don Dodge had some comments as well on his website. It shouldn't be surprising. But you guys have probably read as much as I have on this. But love to hear guys' thoughts and processes on what do you think? Tell me. Email me. Call the voicemail hotline and say, Todd, I like it. I hate it. This is what I don't like. I think it's going to make me dumb. You know, whatever you think. I'd love to hear your feedback on this. Or, again, just email at geeknews@gmail.com or the hotline at 619-342-7365. Hey, congratulations to Sony. The PlayStation has turned 15 today. So 15 years with the Sony PlayStation or, of course, multiple variations of that. In the beginning of the show, I obviously said I wanted to talk about AT&T. And, boy, oh, boy. You know, they're given an inch and they take a mile. And this is an article over on arsthetica.com. And by the way, about 90% of the articles tonight that I genned up were from sites that all of you submitted in websites that I need to be reviewing. One thing I have to watch out for is some of those sites were not super timely on content. So I'll have to be weeding through those a little bit to make sure that the stuff that they're covering is not news. It's 3 days old. But over at Ars Tech, they got an article here talking about some comments AT&T made where they say AT&T has set off yet another net neutrality firestorm, claiming that the crucial internet standards making body gave its blessing to ISP priority access deals way back at the beginning of all in the late 1990s. Now, this has caused a firestorm of comments from the IETF. Essentially, AT&T is insinuating that paid priority access was fully contemplated by the IETF several decades ago. The IETF has come out and said baloney. They're saying AT&T's characterization is misleading, and this is from the quote from Russ Housley. He told the National Journal several days later that the IETF prioritization technology is geared toward letting network users indicate how they want network providers to handle their traffic, and there is no implication in the IETF about payment based on any prioritization. Now, remember, folks, I'm telling you, we've talked about this a lot. All of these carriers, whether it be a mobile carrier, whether it be a landline carrier, whether it be a cable provider, whether it be a dish network, they're all under massive, massive pressure because the landscape of the internet is changing everything. It's ripping their business models out from underneath them. So AT&T, obviously, they deep down in their soul, they want to prioritize traffic. They want to limit the amount of video that comes to your basically into your home. They want to limit the packet utilization of Skype. Deep down in their soul, they really want to do this. And they're going to try to use any angle that they can. Now, here's the thing that's sick about this is that AT&T made these comments to the FTC. This was in their argument about, hey, you know, net neutrality, we should throw that out the window because the IETF already planned for this. And this is a hot debate. Now, given that limiting content prioritization is central to the FCC's proposed net neutrality rules, as well as the Google Verizon Open Internet Manifesto, of course, AT&T and various other groups have been going at it for weeks over the issue. So we just got to stay involved, folks. Need to make sure that when the FTC opens up for comments on this type of stuff, we get in there and hammer away at this, make sure that net neutrality is invoked and made a right for all of us, and that we won't run into groups like AT&T or companies like AT&T making these ridiculous claims. Hey, I want to share with you something that TSA has put up on a poster that they have created. And actually, why did that do that? Copy. And I hate it when that happens. What I do is I do a paste and go in Chrome. It brings the article up in the browser here. Now, when I was in the Navy, there were signs all around airfields that would say, no picture taking. And of course, around military bases and in military airfields, they had the right to do that. But the TSA has got a poster that says, don't let our planes get into the wrong hands. And it shows a picture of a guy standing on outside of an airport with a long telephoto lens, taking a picture through a fence. It says, if you question it, report it, call local law enforcement, report your airport manager. And it's got a 800 number for you to call if you see someone taking a picture of an airplane. The TSA has responded and say, oh, no, we're just trying to make a point. We want to make people more aware of what's going on in the world. You don't think we're not all more aware of what's going on in the world? You know, I fly a lot and I'm sitting on planes and it doesn't go through, you know, it's not a flight that doesn't go by that I think about, all right, what am I going to do if some idiot tries to storm the cockpit? What am I going to do? You know, and I got in my mind what I'm going to do. Put it this way, they're not going to get through that door. But make a long story short, why does the TSA have this poster? It's like, hey, go, you know, you see someone taking a picture, go report them. should make you really go, not a well thought out poster by TSA, that's for sure. Hey, we're on Bloomberg Business Week. And this is actually in the science front. And when I read this initially, I thought, this could lead to abuse. Brain scans could spot developmental problems in kids. Researchers are suggesting that tests may give warning if a child's brain growth is behind schedule. Apparently, a new study appears that doing a quick MRI on a child's brain can give doctors and healthcare officials a very quick indication whether or not the child's brain is maturing properly, and with the potential of providing an early warning sign that mental problems are developing. They're saying that research that they say the strategy could turn an ordinary brain scan into a tool similar to the age growth charts that tell pediatricians if kids are growing at an appropriate rate. I don't know what I think about this one here, because the government's going to, first of all, come out with this standard, right? At 2 years old, the kid's skull must be X size, you know. And you take your kid in there and they get one of these MRIs and the doctor comes out and tells you your son is 15% behind in child development growth because his brain's smaller. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? You guys feel uncomfortable with this? Or do you think this is a good tool? It definitely raises some privacy issues. And, you know, what happens if your kid is, just a little bit smaller or whatever, and, you know, they flag the person as, or flag your kid as having developmental problems. It goes in the record, affects your insurance, stigmatizes the family. I don't know what you guys think about this, but I'd love to hear your feedback on this. Do you feel that you'd be willing to take your child in for a brain scan, for an MRI, to see if they were developing properly? I think most of us have a pretty good clue on how our kids are doing developmental-wise. You know, your first one, if you're, you know, if you haven't been around a lot of kids, you know, your first kid is, you know, you kind of learn as you go, right? And there's books, but really, it's, you got OJT, you know. And by the time you have your second kid or third, and for me, my fourth, you know, I know what's going on with the kids usually and in the developmental phase. And, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about submitting my kids to a brain scan. All right, over at Wired, and this is all over the place as well. Folks at Apple today have essentially looks like acquiesced a little bit to the developmental community. And this may have been forced by the FTC investigation that began in the spring of 2010. Apple really has kind of reversed course here a little bit. And one of the authors over at Geek News Central, actually, Tom, who wrote an article, he basically, on for the website, said, did Apple blink? And I think they did, Tom. I think they blinked. Said, from Apple's press release, in particular, we are relaxing all restrictions on the development tools used to create iOS apps as long as the resulting apps do not download any code. This should give developers the flexibility they want while preserving the security we need. Goes on to say, in addition, for the first time, we are publishing the App Store review guidelines to help developers understand how we review submitted apps. We hope it will make us more transparent, help our developers create even more successful apps for the App Store. And this was the write-up by Tom, one of our contributing bloggers at Geek News Central. The folks over at Gizmodo reported that immediately Adobe said, we're resuming work on the iPhone app development. In other words, Flash. They said they are immediately going full strength to bring Flash back to Apple, the Apple products. Now, some people are saying this means nothing. I saw a bunch of blog posts that were essentially that. This means nothing. And then some folks are saying the standards that they allowed are still murky. And obviously, people are not completely happy. So it looks like, in the response we're seeing from developers, is that Apple kind of tiptoed their way through this a little bit. And but this is a huge, huge reverse course by Apple. And, you know, the FTC thought that the ban, especially on Flash, might have been used as a way to protect Apple's dominance. And basically saying that also the programming code where they said they had to use, they weren't allowed to use Objective-C apps. In other words, if you write the app in an Objective-C layer, it's easy to send it to Android, send it to BlackBerry, send it to iPhone. With the same code base with some upper layer stuff changed, with Apple having banned that, basically they locked the iOS developers into these silos that caused them to do all this extra work to get onto these other platforms. Now, I'm excited because if this means that we can do the underlying code once and get into Android, get into BlackBerry and all these other devices, it makes it a lot easier and a lot less expensive, that's for sure. And it may help them in the end. They may end up getting more apps than ever because maybe people become a little less disgruntled, but only time will tell on this. And, But I don't know. Maybe they were worried. Maybe they were worried that the FTC was going to bring the hammer down on them and really, and who knows, they may still. But only time will tell on that. I think my dog just crashed into the into the studio door. I heard him scrambling out there. You know, this is funny. I just have to share this with you guys. Ever been walking down the street and have a pigeon or a bird do a targeting practice on you? I won't read what this article says. I only will show the result to his iPhone. Apparently, an individual was walking down the street and a bird used him as target practice. And when he jumped, he dropped his iPhone into the street and it was run over by multiple cars. When the guy took it into the Apple store, the Apple employee said, "That's the most destroyed iPhone we have ever seen by far." And if you look at this thing and look at the pictures up close, it looks like a pancake. This thing just got absolutely destroyed. You know, would that just totally upset you? You know, you're walking down the street, you have your iPhone in your hand, and a bird doo-doo's on you, and you jump and you drop your phone, and oh, man. Too funny. Absolutely too funny. But I'll have this guy link up in the show notes. You guys can send him a sympathy note. Hey, Boxy made an announcement yesterday, I think, and I want to talk about it today. They have decided to change infrastructure of Boxy, and actually its new release, the new browser that Boxy utilizes, is built on WebKit and HTML5 Ready. So what's exciting for me is, you guys know, we already have apps on the Boxy, and with this development, what it really does is really ups the ante, and for video content, being able to have a true experience on the device, I think it's going to be awesome. So we're pretty excited to see what Boxy has done there, and going to be really excited when their device gets on the street here in the next couple of months. We know that the $199 D-Link device is going to be forthcoming, so we'll see what happens there. And also, there. Well, I actually can't say that. I can't say what I was going to tell you. I have privileged information that I almost shared. I'll be quiet. I almost got in trouble there. I was going to tell you guys about something else I was made aware of, but I have to zip it. So anyway, watch what's happening with Boxy. And good luck to them on their product launch when hopefully it comes soon. All right, let's talk just a little bit here about an interview today that was done by Intel's CEO. And this actually kind of surprised me. I think we were all expecting the Google TV not to be ready until November. But Intel's CEO, Paul Otellini, today made the comment that the first Google TV devices are probably going to be coming out next month or even earlier this month or later this month. He didn't say who. But it very well could be the Logitech device. We know Sony's close as well. So I'm excited to see the Google TV come out, and you can be absolutely guaranteed I'll be picking up the first one that's on the street just to get my hands on and be able to run it through a paces. And of course, this will be for part of our development. We're going to do it raw voice. We're putting, you know, making all our stuff real Apple TV friendly. Google TV friendly. So we'll see how that goes. But now, one thing he didn't mention in this interview was that he felt that the Apple TV serving a certain purpose and the Google TV serving another purpose could both sit on the your TV stand. The challenge that I think Google TV is going to have in some of these early devices, especially with the Logitech device, is it's going to sit between your set-top box and your TV. So you actually have to hook it up. And a lot of people don't like to get back in there and mess with cables. So that might be a challenge. And they're also doing an infrared thing where you have to put that up somewhere where it can detect your remote control. So we'll see how that all turns out. But I think Google TV is going to be good from a social media aspect. Because, you know, what I'm hoping is going to happen is if you guys are watching, for example, my show, and two or three of you are in the Google TV device, or I hope 100 or 1,000, you'll be able to chat live while I'm doing the show and comment to between one another from the comfort of your lazy boy. And believe me, I'm looking forward to all of you being able to experience the show in that lean back mode more than you already are. So, but anyway, we'll see what happens with this. And thanks for the little intel from Intel. Hey, take care of a little more about business here. You guys know that Infusionsoft is a new is a sponsor here, and the podcast is brought to you in part by Infusionsoft. But by the end of this show, 140 new small businesses will be created. By this time next year, half of those will have failed, and I think used to be like it was 80% failure. But if you're a small business owner, you really don't need statistics to understand how hard it is to survive and grow, especially in the face of daily challenges. As I'm finding out, Infusionsoft can help. Infusionsoft has helped thousands of truly small businesses grow quickly and profitably through the power of automated follow-up marketing. Infusionsoft can help you too, so if you're struggling to find a better way to grow your business, visit infusionsoft.com/pod1 to see it in action. Go fill the information out that they asked for, and then just watch the video. That'll get you kind of dialed into what they do. And no harm, no foul if you're not interested in their product and service. And thanks for Infusionsoft for being a sponsor here at Geek News Central. Hey, we're at makingwindowseasy.com. This is just a little tip. Most of you are pretty tech savvy out there, but how many of you have run into a RAR archive? And some people get confused about that. And the reason I say this is because I had someone ask me today, how do I unzip an RAR file? My kids. And so I said, there's unarchivers for that. I think if you have WinZip, it will actually do it, but most of you would probably want something free or open source. RARZilla for unrarring files. I'll have that linked up in the show notes for you. Again, RARZilla is the name of the program. It's free. It'll unrar your RARs. That's a mouthful. So I'll have the link up for you in the show notes. All right. Pop music thing and, all these stars are on Twitter. But this Justin Bieber, he's got a huge following, over 5 million followers on Twitter. And it's reported that he's using 3% of Twitter's capacity and that they have banks of computers just for Justin. Twitter's not actually saying how many servers it's required to run his Twitter stream, but they said that the president, Oprah, Ashton has a few. So I'm sure they don't have any extra servers for me. I only have, I think, 5,500 followers. So, can you imagine that? One individual having to have banks of servers to maintain a Twitter stream for someone that's getting followed by millions? Pretty crazy, isn't it? This just shows you pop culture. Hey, over on the BitTorrent front, we haven't talked about BitTorrent in quite a while, largely because it's been so, brutalized in the news. Everyone that you talk BitTorrent, you do peer-to-peer, you do file sharing. Anytime you talk about BitTorrent, that's the first thing a lot of people will say. But today, BitTorrent officially debuted what they're entitling BitTorrent apps. And this is kind of interesting. I wasn't familiar that they were doing this. And this is available for a non-beta state, so it's the official release. But the company chose BitTorrent Mainline, is I guess the name of one of the clients, over the leading brand uTorrent for the release, giving 14 million users access to their app platform. Now, I think apps, what are you going to use apps for in a BitTorrent application? But I went over there and take a look at it. I think there's only 11 apps in the App Store. And it kind of, what it does is just kind of automate some of the processes depending on where you're doing sharing and some of the tools that you use. So I think this could, and they're really, I don't even know if they really should be called apps. They're kind of like plugins that go along to work with the application. So up to this point, there hasn't been a lot of news on this because these apps have been available only to a small number of uTorrent users who are downloading, experimenting with them. So I'll see what more information I can get over this over the next couple of days. And I haven't used a BitTorrent client in a long time, so I'll get this downloaded and apply a couple of these and see how they work. But give you some more feedback on it on a later show. If any of you are using that, I'd love to hear your feedback on it. If you're using BitTorrent Mainline and have plugged in any of these apps that they've got in their so-called app store, we'll see what basically give me some feedback. Hey, and you guys, I told you in the beginning of the show that Rob Greenlee is going to be joining us on Saturday morning for the Morning Tech Show. And I wanted to point out the Zune Insider. It's a podcast that Rob does. Zune Insider number 84 was released on September 3rd, and it talks about the United Airlines trial that's going to be going on, along with some other things. So if you're a Zune user, or you fly on United, they've got some cool stuff coming, and we'll probably talk about this on a Saturday with Rob, but I wanted to point you guys out to Rob's podcast. You can check that out. Of course, Rob is the podcast director for the Zune, and I'm sure if you guys want to get info on what's going on with Zune and podcasting, you definitely want to tune in Saturday. Rob's going to be a regular guest here on the show, so we look forward to having Rob on from time to time. Hey, over at dumblittleman.com, and this is one of the links that was submitted by one of our Ohana. He's got an article up, 8 awesome tools to quickly take notes and annotate web pages. Some of these you're probably very familiar with, like Evernote or OneNote. I've used both of those. One's a software, both of them are software applications. But some others that you may not be familiar with, like Digo, SpringNote, Scrapbook, UberNote, I have a link up to this. But, you know, when you're doing research, and, you know, basically if you're in school and you're trying to do lots of collecting information for maybe a paper you have to write or something you're doing for a business project, these make some great tools to really take quick notes and annotate things that you find on web pages. I'll have this link up in the show notes for you to check out. Make sure you do. Amazon today, boy, I'm really excited about this. Angelo is actually, he's coming back from vacation. Him and his wife and daughters have spent the past week in Washington, D.C. So he's been pretty much offline. He's responding to a couple of emails, but he'll be back in the office in the morning. And he called me this afternoon and left a voicemail. He was like really excited. He says, did you check out the press release from Amazon on these micro instant concept? And I had gotten the email this morning, so I already knew what he was talking about. But what they're doing is, this is cheap. They're providing a Amazon EC2 instance, basically like a hosting site, or really, you have to be really kind of geeky to get this, but like blueberry.com, that, because we outgrew the servers we were on at GoDaddy, we took blueberry.com and moved it on to a large EC2 instance. And really what it is, it's a virtual computer. You pay by the basically CPU cycle and how much memory you have and, you know, bandwidth. It's all tied in. I think that, well, I won't say how much that server costs a month. It costs quite a bit because it's a significant powerhouse. Well, we use that big one to drive that high volume traffic site and do everything it does. But for a small website, if you are wanting to play around and do some, you know, some testing, and start an EC2 instance, maybe you'll start up a small hosting instance, you can do it for about $15 a month. And again, this is not for the not initiated. They do have basically packages that you can use to, they're pre-built instances, and I'm sure we're going to see a bunch of these build up. But it's basically a little microcomputer, and they're going to limit it to about 680 megs of actual memory. It's only going to be made up of 2 computation units. In other words, very small. So probably could handle a very small website. And they give you a certain amount of peak amount that you can bust up to for a limited time. But it is pretty interesting that they're actually getting into this market here in running a micro instance. Again, run on 600, designed the AMI to run under 600 megs, limit the number of recurring processes that the CPU uses. And so in other words, in Linux, you can optimize performance using swap space and virtual memory. So we'll see what happens with this, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to be excited to experiment with it, especially for small little projects and jobs that you need done. But $16 a month if you run it continuously. What a great deal. Hey, earlier this year, Jupiter took a couple of major asteroid hits, and there's been some analysis done on that. And over at space.com, they've got some articles that are basically some write-ups about the energy released. It says the energy released by the June 3rd fireball as it collided with Jupiter's atmosphere was between a fifth and a tenth of the 1908 Tunguska event on Earth, which knocked over tens of millions of trees in a remote part of Russia. I probably just named that region wrong. But they're continuing to do an analysis on the August 20th fireball. But scientists said it was comparable to the June 3rd object. They think the size of this was about 20 meters. It was about the size of the 30 to 40 feet, or 8 to 13 meters was the size of the June 3rd asteroid that hit Jupiter. We definitely don't need any of those hitting Earth anytime soon. That's for sure. As much damage as it did on Jupiter, I can imagine what it would do here. But good write-up at space.com. Hey, the Space Shuttle Discovery has left the hangar for its final space flight. The Space Shuttle Discovery rolled out to the launch pad this morning. So this is the Discovery's last flight. It's going to be STS-133. And this will be the shuttle's 39th flight. And since it began its space service in 1981, it is the oldest shuttle. And this is this last one for Discovery. And I'm sure that this is the one that a lot of people are bidding on to get in their to get into their museums and so forth. I didn't talk to you guys about my trip up to the Space and Air Museum Dulles, right? Going up and seeing a space shuttle that was there and going through that. I have to talk to you guys about that a little bit. I had a great time for a couple of hours over there. But anyway, this, I don't have the launch date on this, but it has to be probably a couple of weeks away for the next flight, but last flight for Discovery. All right, moving on here. The one last space news before we get in back into the tech stuff. And the NASA rover is halfway to the huge crater on Mars, 2 years after setting out for a huge Martian crater that could hold a lot of clues about the red planet. Opportunity has hit a halfway milestone. They've been traveling between 150 and 300 feet a day for the past 2 years. And it's made 6 miles of its 12-mile trip to this crater. Of course, Spirit is stuck on the other side of the planet, and it doesn't look too good. Spirit hasn't called home to Mama yet. And they think that the Spirit mission may be done. But no fear. You know, we've got Opportunity still on the roll. It's actually dragging one of its wheels because it quit rolling. But the next Mars rover that is going to be scheduled to be sent to Mars is called Curiosity. And it's set for a launch in November of 2011 with a landing on Mars of August 2012. So really not that far away. And we're going to have another, a bigger rover on the Mars surface. And so that'll be something to look forward to. And who knows, Opportunity may still be on the roll by the time its new rover brother hits the outer atmosphere of Mars. Hey, today I was reading about a new website called encoding.com, and I had to laugh because this company, what they're doing is they're taking individuals' videos like mine and they're re-encoding them into multiple formats. And to date, I have heard no complaints about my content in multiple video players. I think as long as you're sticking with the M4V MP4 format, it works pretty good. Now, obviously, my file is pretty big because I do a long show, and I could use their re-encoding service to make it smaller for some of the screens. But I was looking at their pricing. By doing an average of 8 videos a month, with my average video size around 800 megs, and doing a number of outputs that they would format in, I'd be looking about $100 a month for encoding. And I thought, that isn't too bad. And then I said, can I download that file and serve it off my own servers? And that's where things get crazy. They are ridiculous. 0 to 100 gigabits a month, $2.50. 100 to 1,000 gigs a month, $2 a gig. $2 a gig. is what they're charging. Let me tell you something. Bandwidth today, if you're moving a lot of bandwidth and you get it from a CDN, you can get it wholesale below 10 cents a gig. And these guys are charging $2 a gig. They're smoking crack. That is insane pricing. That's where they're making their money. Case study, comparison of in-house encoding costs versus cloud encoding costs for two scenarios. They did a comparison of between $116,000 to $131,000. I just can't, this just is not realistic. So anyway, if you're looking for some encoding service to do multiple codecs, you can consider these guys, but stay away from their bandwidth. Unbelievable price. Hey, are you a Sesmic fan? Have you used the Sesmic Desktop 2 aggregator that's available? Well, they've added some plugins available for that. I'm not familiar with this. I have not used this application, but I know a lot of people have. It's got a huge write-up over at TechCrunch. I have the link up in the show notes for you. Lots of comment on this by multiple sites. People are pretty excited about it. If you're a Sesmic user, let me know. Also, if you're on Facebook, the Facebook folks have developed a new like button that can be easily employed around a variety of sites and on web pages. So I'll have a link up to that in the show notes for you to check out. So again, that's some new options for the like button from Facebook. Let's see here. I think I already covered this part. Yeah, I already talked about the Intel interview. I had two articles open about that. Hey, do you stay at, like me, do you stay at a lot of hotels? Well, I stay at Marriott from time to time. I stay at Sheraton's from time to time. I don't stay at Westin's, but HEI Hospitality, owner and operator of hotels operating under the Marriott, Sheraton, Westin, and other brands, has sent letters to 3,400 customers that their credit card data may have been compromised. So this is a security breach of data. And I think this is a more upscale hotel. Some of you are very high-end. So that's, you know, definitely I'm not staying at high-end hotels. It doesn't fit into the budget. But if you've been staying at some upscale hotels that are operated by HEI Hospitality, which you wouldn't know because you're just staying at some brand, but be aware that they're sending letters out about security breach to credit card data. Hey, next Tuesday, Microsoft is going to have 9 bulletins to patch. 4 of them are critical, and then 5 important ones. Affects software on XP, Vista, Windows 7, variety of server products, Outlook 2002, 3, and 7. And there is no patch yet for the recently discovered Internet Explorer CSS XSS flaw that's out there in the wild. So next Tuesday, I'll get a big patch. And if you're getting an email that has the title in the subject line, here you go, delete it. Don't click on anything. It's a fast-moving email worm that has begun to spread today that is affecting hundreds of thousands of computers worldwide. It's brought some servers down. In fact, some governmental servers were brought down because of this. So the email arrives with the subject, here you have, or here you go. And it's got an executable screen saver in it that is disguised as a PDF and can do some damage. So if you don't know who it's come from, be careful of any PDFs you get over the next couple of days. So there's more information from Symantec and McAfee available from this source article that I found over at theregister.co.uk. All right, right on time here, right at the top, we're going to go ahead and get into the email comments. We might actually finish early tonight, folks. Tech news little tight tonight as I was searching through. But I do have some email comments to go into. No voicemail tonight. So if you have comments on the show, definitely feel free to give me some feedback at 619-342-7365. Again, area code 619-342-7365. Hey, my good friend Frank is a longtime listener of the show, submits comments all the time. He has submitted some feedback to us that said, "Hey, Todd, I like the way in Tuesday's podcast you referred to the three major stories in the intro. Frank, if I do everything right, that's going to be here to stay. And I'm glad you like the kind of the change up on the intro. Got an email here from Alan. He said, "Hey Todd, you don't need to add me to the Roco drawing." Hey Alan, we did the Roco drawing already. He says, "But here's the full OPML file for my Google Reader. There's a lot of sites there that you could ignore. The football and cycling links, but I think there's some tech sites in there that you may not know of." Alan, thanks for your submission. I definitely appreciate that. Hey, I got an email here from Ron. He says, "Hey, Todd, Japanese research from the University of Tokyo and Keiko University has prototyped a new mobile gaming system that combines a Pico projector, a camera, and an acceleration sensor. The idea is that you can control characters projected on any surface by moving the device, and the characters act differently depending on what you are projecting on it. It can walk on horizontal bars, etc." So he provided me a link to this over at picoprojector.info.com. I'll have that link up in the show notes. Thanks for that, Ron, for sending that over. I got an email here from Adrian. He's one of the tech podcasters over at techpodcast.com. He does the Geekinator, Linux News Now, Apple. There's a variety of shows that Adrian does. You can find him over again at techpodcast.com. But he says, "Hey, Todd, just watching show number 608, heard your comment on the Canon Vixia cameras. Just thought I'd let you know that I'd shoot both the Geekinator and Linux News Log." Boy, I should know that. He's been doing this as long as I have. "With a Canon Vixia HFS100. He says, if you have enough light, its picture quality is hard to beat. Just thought I'd chime in, Adrian." Adrian, thanks for that. I definitely appreciate the link to that. Got an email from Andrew. He says, "Hey, Todd, I just saw this and I had to share it. It's called the iRig iPhone Guitar Interface." And let's just bring this up, Andrew, see what you've happened upon here. And, this is cool. Let me bring this up in the on the screen for all of you to check out. And let's see if I can bring that up in the forefront. What this is you've got this is way cool. It's $40. And you plug a jack into the top of the iPhone. Then you've got this device that's called an iRig. You can see where the guitar hooks in on one side and probably headsets on the other. And it allows you just basically to do the same thing that you would do with a floor-mounted bounce pedal. It allows you to change tones and so forth. So what else will it allow you to do? Distortion, delay, do an envelope filter. It'll allow you to do a chorus selection. So all kinds of selections right from your iPhone into, but the question is, it looks really cool, and I like this kind of stuff, and you know, I'm not a musician, but Andrew, you know, that's the reason why those types of things sit on the floor, because if they're jamming with a guitar, it's not like they can reach down and change the setting with the iPhone. You know, they'd have to stop playing music and change the setting and then keep playing. And me, for self-jamming out, it's going to work. I guess that's probably what the purpose of it is, but it definitely will not work for any live set stuff. So it's a cool one, though. Thanks, and you keep those types of cool things coming. I got an email from Tim. He said, "Hey, Todd, ran into this cool story. They also got a projector so they could have some entertainment. This is a CBS News article talking about the Chilean miners who got a fiber optic cable down into their safe place where they're at and waiting to get dug out. But they actually can see some video down there now, which is interesting. So I have that link up in the show notes for you. Also got an email from Tim. He says, "Hey, Todd, check out the Fox News article about tractor beams. Thought it was kind of cool." And they've done tractor beams, folks, with a couple of lasers. He says, "By the way, I visit Fox News Science Tech page for info sometimes. It's not updated as much as the other mainstream sites, but it does have unique info occasionally. Have a great day, Tim." Thanks for that. I got an email from Alan. He says, "Hey, Todd, cool video of IE9. And this is a IE9 UI video that's been linked. I have that link up in the show notes. I got an email from Holger, and he says, "Hey, Todd, I came across these articles the other day. A bit of a trip down memory lane for us old-timers. The set of articles goes through the history of the Commodore Amiga computer. I never had an Amiga myself. I had a Commodore 64, but I always wanted one at the time. In any case, This was a good read. I have this link up in the show notes for you. Holger, you know, I cut my teeth on a Trash 80, the original Trash 80, which I still have, which I did basic coding in, and I could actually use the cassette deck to save my little programs from, or you could buy the cassette tape and upload games. So when I got that Trash 80 at a garage sale, and we have come a long way. We sure have. Got an email from Nir. Of course, Nir's out of Israel. He said, telemedicine is big business and moving fast. Todd, you stretch this example a little further than most people or doctors would, but long-distance consultations with experts are taking care of patients in remote-located clinics is a reality today. And yeah, Nir, I know that. I know that many servicemen, in fact, are getting consultations for injuries they're suffering in the field, on the battlefield almost. You know, the surgeon patches the guys up, and they're doing a medical conference calls and doing pass downs on patient care in the war zone. And Nir, thanks for that. And I understand there is a purpose for it, but it does. I think there's going to be some trade offs that we're all going to have to live with on these doctors that are basically rolling around on wheels. And you're just talking to him on a screen. But thanks for that. I appreciate it. I put the link up in the show notes. Tom, I got your email. And that's it. That's all the emails for tonight. So, everyone, thanks for hanging out with me. It's been a lot of fun. And, hey, we finished up in record time tonight. And, of course, I didn't spend quite as much time in the beginning talking about administrative stuff as I normally do. But hey, thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of the family. I hope you'll take time out of your Saturday morning. And if you know if you're on the West Coast and you're up, you know, you've had your coffee and checked out the latest news, don't forget at 9 a.m. Pacific, I'll be started here at Geek News Central. We'll have the live stream up, and you can join me and join Andy and Rob, and we'll have a great time. You see that? I didn't change that camera again. So we hope that you'll come out and hang out. It'll be a lot of fun. But until then, I guess everyone take care. We'll see you, most of you, hopefully on Saturday. Come out and hang out with me. And if not, we'll be back here with a regular scheduled podcast for a Monday night recording, Tuesday release next week. I'm home all next week. My wife gets some minor surgery on a hand midweek, so I have to be home for that, not going on travel. Looks like I'm going to probably be home for a couple weeks, which is good. And we're pounding on NewTek's door saying, where is the TriCaster? The TCXD850 has not been delivered yet, and that is an awful lot of cash to have been spent and no delivery yet. So we're hoping to get the new 850 in soon. The new purchaser of the TriCaster Studio, he is wanting to do some projects here soon. So a little bit of pressure to make that handoff. But anyway, planning continues for CS 2011 as well. And we're excited about what we're going to be bringing to you there. But again, until next week, everyone take care. And if you're not going to come hang out with me Saturday, we'll see you next week. Until then, aloha.